Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich.
Hello.
Today we have a special episode. I feel like I say that every time, but they're all unique to me. Dave and I spend an inordinate amount of time in the air traveling. I think your Delta status is higher than mine. I'm trying not to be too obsessive about it.
It's reasonably high. It doesn't get you anything extra, though.
Oh, that's not all right. That's a whole other podcast that's coming out next fall.
Yeah, wait for it.
Wait for it. With all that said, Dave and I do spend probably more time than we should in airports, on flights, crisscrossing the globe. And as a result, we see sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly of airports and airport drinking.
Airport bars, thank God for them, one.
Absolutely.
And two, holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, I'll get this out of the way. Yeah. I think more airports could use bars.
They could use more bars.
Well, better bars. But I would just take bars, right? Yeah. Let's start first.
Not every airport has a bar.
And even ones where you think they would have an amazing bar, I was just down in Louisville over the weekend. And, up until recently, there wasn't really a great bar. And there's no bar once you get past security. There's literally, once you're at your gate and, God forbid there's a delay,
that's
choice is Starbucks or Chili's. I mean, Chili's does serve beer, and I may have had a morning beer on some trips there.
I mean, it's possible theoretically.
Not as good as morning scotch, but morning beer is acceptable. You would think there, of all places, there would be a place to cool your jets, drink some whiskey, have a cocktail between flights. It would be welcome.
I have been extremely hungover in that airport.
I can believe it.
In Louisville bourbon trips and events and seeing Hank Williams III and doing shots backstage and even seeing him take off his cowboy hat, shake down his long hair, and do a metal set just to make the country music fans angry.
That's amazing. I love it.
And that might have led to shots backstage and extreme pain at the Louisville airport the next day. But I would have really very, very gladly had a Bloody Mary there had one been offered to me.
We've definitely missed out on sort of the Pan Am glory days of travel, beautiful lounges and airports and terminals.
As is my wont, I did a little research into the history of the airport bar.
I had a feeling you might.
And it's very funny. Airports come in the late 1920s.
Right.
Because that's when you first start getting commercial passenger travel. I mean, in these tiny planes.
You're telling that Orville and his brother, when they were
launching their
plane. Yeah, and
then they put the person on the back.
In Kitty Hawk, there wasn't a bar along the beach. And
if you and I were the Wright brothers, there might have been a bar, because that thing looked terrifying, and I would have liked to drink before and
I would need some Dutch courage to get into it.
But you start seeing airport bars popping up in the 1930s. And the first thing I found was a great story about this English guy, J.A. Mollison, who was at the airport in Le Touquet in France, which was a resort, a very fancy resort. And he was a pilot. And as he told the press later, I felt good and left the airport bar where I had some drinks. And he got into his plane and went and did aerobatic loop-de-loops over the beach and nearly gave everybody a heart attack because they'd never seen such a thing. And he just flew completely crazy and then landed and got him into a whole lot of hot water. But the fact that they had a bar at the airport at Le Touquet was kind of amusing to me. And you start seeing them coming in. I think first they were in Europe before they were here. partly probably because after effects of Prohibition.
Sure.
But you start seeing them coming in here in the early 1940s, and they're a little bit controversial. Do we want a bar in our airport?
Right.
Even as late as like 1947, Honolulu was still debating whether they should have a bar. And that's in Honolulu.
Right.
They should have a bar.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. A swim-up bar.
It's a long flight that you're going to get on. But you start seeing like there's things like two Nazi consuls in America are sent home in the middle of 1941. World War II is raging. We're not in it yet. And they have their farewell party at the airport bar in San Francisco, and 125 people show up, which scares me.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about any of those people.
No,
I don't like those people.
Yeah. Who were those people?
I don't know. There's a photo of these guys, though, and they're not attractive.
No. Be an interesting book trying to figure out who those people
were. Yeah, with that party, about that party. But it was definitely the Nazi party at the airport bar.
I mean, that story does raise a good point where, you know, obviously now you go to the airport and you need a ticket to go to the gate and watch the planes. But when it started, and really up until not that many years ago, that was like a thing to do. Like, you would go to the airport, you could have dinner, you could have drinks, watch the planes take off. Like, this was entertainment.
One of the great restaurants and cocktail bars in America was the Newarker.
I was going to bring that one up.
Oh, yeah. Well, go. Yeah.
It was Joe Baum's first, restaurant, or one of his first, and he obviously went on to run Restaurant Associates and the Rainbow Room,
the Four Seasons, the Forum of 12 Caesars,
right?
All these iconic American restaurants,
and obviously, you know, sort of unwittingly gives, you know, the impetus for the rebirth of the cocktail when he tasks Dale DeGroff, sort of.
I don't even think it was unwittingly. I think he knew what he was doing.
Do you think so? I mean, at least he definitely knew about cocktails and wanted cocktails the classic way, which was something that at the time nobody was really doing
in the 80s.
I mean, at the Rainbow Room. And even Dale admits that when, you know, Joe would, you know, told him what he wanted, he had no idea what he was talking about. Wait, drinks without sour mix? Like,
I guess I can do that.
Simple. Like, he just I don't think. He wasn't the type of, at least from what Dale has told me, he's not the type of guy that you said no to. So if Joe wanted classic cocktails made like some crazy guy called Jerry Thomas, you went out and you looked for Jerry Thomas. And like, that's when Dale started, you know, digging in, you know, old bookstores. And
when Joe asked you to do something, you didn't ask him any questions back. You just went and did it.
Right. Obviously, years before the Newarker. That's maybe why it's no longer around.
Yeah.
But you would go to the airport in Newark, which, you know, is not my favorite thing to do. But you can imagine how good the restaurant must have been in the bar if people were actually willing to go out to Newark, to the airport, have dinner, have drinks, watch the planes come and go. Yeah,
and
I mean, it was
a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in Long Beach, California, it's a small airport that I think JetBlue uses sometimes. They still have their 1930s airport bar on the second floor. Of course, you got to go through security for it now, but it's
kind of worth it.
It's the same thing, though. It's like, it's got huge windows. You can watch the planes come and go. You could sit at this elegant Art Deco cocktail bar, and you can get the worst drinks that you're ever going to have. Which is the problem with these things.
Right. As they always say, a good place for a bottle of beer or a scotch and soda.
Or something like that. Gin and tonic, they can probably do.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you could get on a plane.
Absolutely. I saw somebody, you know, on social media a couple of months ago posted a photo of, like, you know, what a normal Pan Am, you know, plane looked like, you know, in the 50s. And it was this amazing shot, you know, the seats looked like kind of like pork loungers, you know, or couches, and everybody was very dapper. And, you know,
everybody dressed up.
I mean, this was, you know, forget, you know, yoga pants and basketball jerseys, as I've seen recently. People were, you know, in suits, jackets, and ties, and fancy dresses.
The airport bars originally mirrored that. They were elegant, you know, cocktail lounges. It was a good job. But at some point, it took a turn. I still remember I was this was 20 years ago. I was went to see Tom Waits on one of his rare tours for his album Frank's Wild Years, and somebody starts heckling him from the audience at City Center here in New York, a small venue. It's kind of funny. It's like, why are you heckling Tom Waits? But somebody's like yelling something, and Tom
what
leans
is he
into
building
the mic.
In there?
Yeah, exactly. And he leans into the mic and he goes, Is that you, Charlie? You still got that job out at the airport? And everybody just cracks up, you know, because that was, he just completely owned and dragged and cut and dissed this guy.
Right.
Like, and it's a shame that that's what it's kind of come down to.
Yeah.
Because that used to be a good job.
Or there's a famous story about It Happened One Night, that movie, right? And you know, it was early on in the Oscars, they're giving out Frank Capra, you know, movie. At the time, the Oscars wasn't like a glitzy affair. It was like a luncheon that was just like any other industry. They gave out the awards. And, you know, it was a big kind of sort of scandal was that Claudette Colbert, you know, who won an Oscar for her portrayal, was wearing a travel suit. Like, she wasn't wearing like a normal suit, but a travel suit. And people knew the difference. I mean,
wow.
So the fact that like people literally had fancy clothes that were designed for travel and that could be, you know, spotted. I mean, that's
As far as I can tell right now, travelers don't know the difference between clothes with sleeves and clothes without them.
It does make getting through security easier. That's the only thing I'll say.
Yeah. You know, hotel, I keep saying hotel bars. They're kind of related, though. Hotel
Absolutely.
Bars and airport bars are bars that have captive populations.
And have seen also there, I think, their fortunes sort of rise and fall,
connected at
the same time.
They used to be elegant places. So much management has come in airport bars.
Yeah.
You know, everything's in a gun. Everything's metered.
Right.
You don't get the best trained bartenders there. You don't get...
Usually not.
There are exceptions, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorites is one of my least favorite airports is Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is a big, frustrating airport where there are many delays.
Ooh.
And... I'm always happy if I get delayed there because I can go to Terminal E to go to One Flew South, which is a lovely cocktail bar with real hospitality.
Yeah.
And they have things like rum agricole. They'll make you a tea punch.
Right.
You know, they'll make you a real drink.
I love there that's kind of like the post office. All the knives and all the implements have to be chained down to the bar top because it is the airport after all.
It is the airport.
But even with all of those kind of limitations, they're turning out really, really amazing drinks.
It's the desire of management to do it because I don't fault airport bartenders. You know, they tend to have jobs where they're expected to just maximize profit and not give any hospitality.
Sure.
That's not, you know, nobody cares about that. Their boss doesn't care. And they're not expected to be creative mixologists or they don't even have the tools
to
work with.
And I'm not sure that travelers want that. You know, nobody wants to, you know, you have a few minutes, you don't, you know, before your flight, you know, nobody wants to wait for a 25 minute long wait.
Although
for your
now we've
cocktail.
Got so many options, you know, there's so many places in an airport. There are chains that have bars. There are craft breweries. That there is room, I think, you know, for the occasional self-selecting. We make great cocktails here.
Speakeasy style airport bar. Yeah. Be behind the Toomey store, open up the right suitcase.
Yep, yep, yep.
And you're
walk
in there.
Through, pull aside this level of rollaways. You
exactly.
Know?
Behind the giant Toblerone bar is a door into a speakeasy. I'm you're right, and I think even like we've seen some better food options too over the years. Like we ran a story here, I think a year or two ago, it was sort of called the new golden age of airport food. And, you know, sort of talking about how people like Shake Shack or, you know, Cat Cora or Rick Bayless, you know, have opened up, you know, better, you know,
food. And it's food with drinks, too.
Yeah. Even like in Minneapolis, that's one of my favorite airports. And I find myself going through there, you know, as much as I can.
It's a nice, well-run airport. Yeah.
Yeah. And on one side, there's a brewery, one of the local wine stores in town has now like a wine, cheese, meat like kind of eatery right in the main food hall, or French Meadow, which is like a great local restaurant. So I mean that's sort of the future, I think. Where
you see it in Europe where they have a little more hospitality. The places are a little more natural.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little too natural. I was in the airport at Cork once at about 6 a.m. and people were too deep at the bar drinking pints. And I was, okay, that's 6 a.m.
Yeah.
That's impressive. One of the greatest airport bar experience of my life was at the bar at Gatwick, outside of London.
Which you don't often hear somebody utter those words.
I know, ever. I was flying to, there was some mixology summit. This was, 12 years ago or more. There's some mix.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mixology Summit in France, and a whole bunch of top American cocktail people came over from New York. We had to change planes. We had to change airports from Heathrow to Gatwick. Right. And there was Sasha Petrosky. There was Robert Hess and Audrey Saunders and a dozen people at least. We arrive late in Heathrow, and we get in our car and drive desperately to Gatwick and miss our flight. And suddenly, there's this point we'd gained a bunch of people. There's like 20 of us, including a bunch of English top bartenders, and we're all waiting to get on this flight to Marseille. And we had 4 hours. So there's the bar, and it's this pub, like classic British pub. And we started in ordering the chips and ordering the pints of beer and the shots of whiskey. And 2.5 hours later, they came to this and they said, "I'm sorry, we're completely out of beer." And then we finished all their whiskey, too.
Right.
I've never done that. It was a big place. We drank them dry.
Wow.
We must have had
a bar tab that I do not want to pay.
There were at least 20 of us, and there must have been something like 6 pints each, something like that.
Yeah.
We even more. Some people were real pint sinkers. And it was amazing. We drank everything.
That's amazing. I love it. Even some of the airplanes back in the day, like, you know, the large ones had the, you know, sort of bar. And I think some of the Emirates flights now have or Air France.
I was like on an Emirates business class flight not too long ago for private business of my own. I was coming back from Italy, and they had a cocktail bar at the back of the cabin. They had a real cocktail list that they handed out. And unfortunately, I tried ordering the Aperol Spritz, and they made it without Aperol or ice.
So what was it? It was nasty.
It was, you know.
Just Prosecco?
It was Prosecco and
Prosecco.
Soda water and no Aperol and no ice. So it was not very good. Because they said it was new, and they were kind of I tried a Negroni on the flight out, and that was okay. But the Aperol Spritz was a little beyond them. They're making the flight attendants mix the drinks.
Right.
And they've got plenty of other stuff to worry about. So they really need just a bartender.
When the Hemingway Bar in the Ritz in Paris, when it was closed for a couple of years, just a few years ago, when the whole hotel went under like this major renovation, and the head bartender, Colin Field, from the bar, he's sort of put on furlough, you know, while they're, you know, while they're doing the renovation. And I think he spent a lot of time doing these like Air France flights where he would get behind the bar. It's kind of that sounds almost like a throwback to,
The Hindenburg had a bar back in the Zeppelin days.
Wow.
Yeah. They had a cocktail bar, and they had their own cocktail list and everything.
Wow.
Which is just crazy. And of course it all burned up, but those big flying clippers, they had bars, you know.
That's amazing.
And so the people could congregate. Sure. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Well, you imagine how slow that would be to go across the ocean in a Zeppelin. Like, it must have taken.
But it would have been pleasant.
Well, that's what we say. Like, just slow, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a hot air balloon ride across the ocean.
For a pleasant ride like that, I would be happy if, you know.
There was a story in the New Yorker a few years ago about how people are trying to recreate these, you know, sort of a new generation of flying ships, you know,
I remember that.
And, but there was no mention of bars, sadly. I think that amenity has been shelved.
I mean, airships with like huge cocktail bars.
Right.
I would travel across country in that.
Just pick up everybody.
Yeah.
We're going to Tales of the Cocktail in my giant airship. Like, get on in. Come on in.
Come on in. We've got room for 24 at the bar.
Exactly. We got bunk beds.
Bunk beds, sleeping off.
Yeah,
you know, you look out and watch the world go by at 5,000 feet, which is extremely pleasant.
Yeah, that doesn't sound bad at all.
It doesn't sound bad at all.
The more we talk about this, I'm like, this is how, forget airports.
I would take the extra time.
Yeah, we should buy an airship and outfit it with a bar.
A bar and a kitchen and, you know, and just, chill.
Yeah, why not? Just that, you know. So if you need Dave or I, we'll be up at 5,000 feet.
I'll be stirring up martinis and shaking up aviations.
Right. The history, you know, obviously of cocktails, the names sort of come from a lot of what was going on at the period, and you get things like
the aviation from the early days from 1913 was which is still popular, sort of, always sort of, but it's you know, with gin and maraschino liqueur and lemon juice and maybe a little splash of creme de violette to make it blue and sky-like.
But that's a classic. To be honest, I never really thought about that, but I guess you're right that that's
it gives it the color. Yeah,
right, and obviously the color is
I mean, there are a few others that are popular. There are not popular that were popular at one point. This guy Eddie Clark, one of the dean of London bartenders in the late 40s, early 50s, had the Comet cocktail for the Comet, which was the first international passenger jet.
Oh, very.
Which it's a beautiful drink with grapefruit juice and Vanderhum, South African like orange liqueur and brandy. A really, really tasty drink. Unfortunately, the Comet on the South Africa run, which was his drink was for, succumbed to metal fatigue and one of its wings fell off and everybody on it was killed. So that was the end of the Comet as a passenger plane. But
probably won't be ordering one of those on my next flight.
No, I think it's probably a bad omen, which is too bad because it's a tasty drink.
Yeah, not going to drink that one.
Nope. There are a few others. There's another really ill-omened one, the burnt fuselage.
Oh, yeah.
After World War One.
You just referenced that in our recent story.
An American pilot who flew for the French, you know, tribute to his fellows who went down in flames. So that's a little gross, but we've still got the B-52.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is both still flying and somebody somewhere is still drinking.
Well, it is funny that, like, the rules even, I've talked to some brands, I'm always like, why aren't you on a, like, on the cart? Like, you should be in there. Like, well, to be on the cart, you need to be in a plastic bottle.
Yeah.
And we won't do it because we're like a super premium brand. So, like, we don't
do plastic.
Right, we don't do plastic. Like, our minis are glass.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of those funny things where you don't really think about it. But then you look at, you know, as you and I do, spend a lot of time looking at airplane menus and what's on the drink card. And you realize, obviously, everything is in a tiny bottle
I spent so much time looking down the aisle
wanting
the drink cart to come closer. A few years ago, this shop in Silver Lake in Los Angeles, barkeeper, was selling drink carts. And I thought I really wanted to buy one. It was a little expensive, but just because if you wheel it out for your guests, anticipation would be so high.
That would be amazing.
It's completely Pavlovian.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, here comes the cart, and I'm moving it very slowly.
And you would only serve them like half a can of soda.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Like, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Sorry.
And the little mini, but some people do a little more. I was flying on Aer Lingus once from Belfast to New York around Christmas time with Gaz Regan, my friend, our you know, amazingly amusing master bartender and character and raconteur. And Gaz and I had been enjoying Belfast. This was after the Troubles were done. And we get on the plane, and it's a five-hour, pretty quick flight. The flight attendant spent the whole time serving alcohol. There were people drinking.
That is Aer Lingus, I
think. They were drinking because it was free, and they knew they were ready for it. They knew what to expect, and people were
they
just getting
thirsty.
Two double vodkas, you know, and and they were just drinking like crazy, and nobody was crazy. Nobody was ill-behaved. Everybody was pounding down the drinks. Gaz and I were just looking at each other like, how is this even possible? And here's somebody, you know, he's got like two whiskeys and a big can of Guinness Stout, and that's his third.
I think the ads for Aer Lingus in Ireland must basically just say unlimited drinks, like
come
party in the air, come thirsty, whatever it is.
Part of you like you're at the airport bar because before they get on, it's the same. You know.
Although if you do ask them for like coffee, they give you the weirdest look.
Yeah, it's like why are you drinking
like coffee? Like coffee? Why?
That's not what this flight is for.
Like, didn't you see the ad?
We're a bar.
We don't have coffee unless you want an espresso martini.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. I was impressed. I got upgraded to the first class in Delta a few days ago, and all of the glasses are Alessi ones. Like,
ooh,
it says Alessi
nice.
For Delta, like the coffee cup.
Wow, the logo. How very
and
fancy.
Then I'd always, you know, they kind of bring out the snacks, and I thought, oh, that's like a nice, I could never tell if it was just my like jet lag or if they were actually nice basket, and I imagine that's also Alessi.
It's probably Alessi.
Yeah, which is, I suddenly had, you know, wanting all of their glassware and all the silverware from, sadly, I had to give it all back, but
they make you do that.
They do. Yeah, they do. They're pretty careful these days about that.
They count their knives. They count their forks.
I would too if it was a Leslie.
Yeah,
you
know,
gave them my house and I had a Leslie silverware. I would make sure that you didn't walk out with any of it either. There is still room for these airlines if they wanted to make their drinks better and to do, you know, real.
Yeah, I'm always sad because I see them launching cocktails and their cocktails are always these like, it's kind of like the elephant is a horse designed by committee, you know?
Right.
And their cocktails are, it's always got like bubbles in it, like bubbly water and juice and spirits and something sweet. And they're always these just drinks that are really not very interesting. They could have like a simple old fashioned and everybody would be happy.
Or
make a Negroni. Like,
it's true. Or even just if they start stocking ginger beer in addition to ginger ale.
Yeah.
Like then you could make, you know, Moscow Mules and Dark and Stormies.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that would be
so I'd like to
simple.
See them stock a dark rum, for instance.
Right. I feel like I've seen Myers's rum.
Oh, I haven't. Oh,
I think I feel
be
like
very
that,
happy with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that would work. Mm-hmm. That would certainly work.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where I'll travel in my little carry-on toiletries kit. I have a little bottle of my traveler's companion, as I call it, which is a dark sugar syrup, very thick, 2-to-1 with Demerara sugar mixed with bitters. And so I get one of the little bottles.
Yeah.
I pour it on ice. I pour in just a little teaspoonful of this syrup, stir it around in instant old fashioned.
Yeah.
And the stuff keeps forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's better. And it's very simple.
It's true. And I don't know if they sell it or if they give it away, but Angostura also makes those tiny
miniatures.
The minis that you know they give out at some of our cocktail conferences and stuff.
But then you do need a little sugar in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
usually
still,
you can get sugar, like depending upon how like gracious the flight attendant is.
There's that.
I'm always asking for, you know, I want a coffee and a club soda and that. But then you're like, I want, you know, a couple of limes and ginger beer and they want the, you know, I don't.
I mean,
you have a copper. Can you give me the copper mug too?
And usually they don't, you know, they don't come back all that often either,
no,
which is a problem.
You get one shot.
Yeah.
One shot. It's like, I won't take any peanuts. Just give me extra limes. Something.
I mean, Some airlines are better about that than others.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a very long flight from London to Sydney once, and it couldn't have been better because they kept coming with Australian craft beer.
Right.
They just came down the aisle. Would you care for another beer? Yes. Why? Now that you mention it,
okay.
I would.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. This is delicious.
Yeah.
And Malaysian food they were serving, like roti, like curry roti. And they gave us pajamas. This was in business class,
but
everybody changed into their pajamas
little pajama party.
And these are the kind of nice design,
gray
designer pajamas, very pleasant. And you just knew that you were going to be there for 14 hours, so you might as well just
sit back, have some beers.
Yeah, have some beers, watch The Godfather, watch The French Connection.
You could watch every Godfather,
pretty much. It was great. You know, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done. It's I just like to see that kind of generosity and graciousness. And that's what I'd like to see in airport bars too, because we don't see that as much.
Yeah.
It's too many times it seems like the employees are harried and
well, they seem like they're the ones trying to catch a plane, not us.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. exactly it. They don't have time for you.
No, throw that drink down. They gotta run. They gotta run. Well, safe travels, Dave. I'll look out for you in the airport.
And happy trails. And we'll be clinking glasses of randomly made gin and tonic somewhere.
Absolutely, in our own homemade old fashions. Don't be weirded out if you see us on a plane.
Yeah, it's just pouring things out of bottles.
Just an old fashioned.
Just an old fashioned. There's nothing of it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.